keep them in your home or love to see them in theirs. These are the creatures that bring us all together. Reptiles.
We're going to be delving into the experiences of reptile lovers from around the block and around the world. This is the Reptile Talk Podcast.
Boom. What's up, everybody? This is Jeremy Turton from Brass Man Reptiles.
And I'm Robin. I'm creeping a reel.
This is number two of the doubleheader. And man, it's episode 98, bro.
Dude, we're almost at that 100th episode. It may have taken us a little bit longer, but we're going to get there.
I think so. We will have 100 episodes up before the end of 2022. That's just it has to happen.
Hey, guarantee. Hey, done deal. Yeah. Done deal. We got this.
Yeah. So this episode, if you're listening in succession, will have gone up, I think, right after Thanksgiving, because our episode with Randall will go up right now. And today's, I don't even know what the heck today is, because I can't see anything that would have a calendar on it.
Friday, November 18th.
There you go. The 18th of November 2022. So you'll be listening to our episode with Randy. We had a great talk about everything. Dominican red, mountain boas, that were also not all just red, and Amazon tree boas, and a bunch of other topics. So hopefully you enjoyed that one. This one is just me and Rob, and we're going to talk about a few different things. I mean, this is certainly not our end of the year wrap up episode by any means.
No.
Because we still have half of this month to go and all of December. Mm-hmm. But I figured we've been fairly sporadic, especially the second half of this year. So I figured we would take some time and just kind of fill you guys in on some stuff and then talk about a various amount of other topics as well. So first of all, thank you to everybody that's already here in the chat. I know there's a couple viewers here. Hopefully some more people will make their way over from the other episode. You know the deal. If you're on YouTube, you want to drop us a super chat, feel free to do so. We'll highlight your comment, answer your question, whatever, and just have a good time. So if you've been listening to some of the past episodes, you know that we were posting stuff every week, and that slowly became more sporadic as time went on. And part of that had to do with Rob and I moving from New Hampshire, North Carolina. And then I started going on the road a lot. So between my travel schedule and then Rob's work schedule and then trying to lock in guests, it was very challenging because we had three very different schedules we were trying to work with. So if you've been hanging in all this time, thank you so much for the continued support. We really do appreciate it. We're getting close to, I don't think we've reached it just yet, but we're getting close to 100,000 downloads in total. That's about 1,000 downloads per episode, which is insane. Like,
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, like, you guys are amazing. It's awesome. Like, we get messages from people all over the world, Australia, the UK, Europe, I mean just everywhere, South America. I mean, it's amazing. You know, I'm so happy that we're able to bring this content to people literally all over the world, because that's amazing. I mean, that's the best part about social media, you know, if there is a good part of it. Just the fact that you get to reach out to so many people literally all over the globe by just jumping onto a computer or a cell phone. So hopefully going into the rest of this year, I have a larger amount of time off, and then going into 2023, I don't know what my schedule totally looks like, but hopefully we can get back to close to weekly posting.
Yeah. I've talked to a couple people who I'm like, just scheduling for the end of the summer has been kind of wild for them. And I know a few more people who I want to reach out to and see if we can get them on. And then I had my phone die for like 2 weeks, and like all this weird stuff has just been happening. So I'm just like, I'm ready to get back into it. I really, after talking to Randy, I'm all ginned up because
been a while. So it's nice to kind of be back in the saddle again, right?
Yeah. Oh man.
Super happy about it. Yeah. And I still have that list. I just found that list that had all the people that, that we wanted to get on. And I know I made a Facebook post about it too. So definitely have a large number of people we still want to get on. I think that list had probably 40 or 50 names on it. So we've got plenty of content to come to you guys, from reptile keepers of all walks of life and age groups and species kept, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I'm excited. I haven't spoken to him recently, but I'm excited about the prospect of still trying to get Tom Crutchfield on.
Get out of my brain! Get out of my brain! I was literally just thinking that, bro!
Yeah, yeah, Tom would be great. I really want to check in with Steve Tillis again, obviously to have him back on the show. But he is, even though I have his contact info, he's not that great at necessarily responding. Getting Eugene Bissett on the show, I think that would be great. There's a bunch of different people that we want to get on, and most, I think just about everybody has said yes. It's just been a matter of actually planning
scheduling
it,
yeah,
planning it up. So there's a lot of content that we have to bring to you guys, and we're very much excited for that. Also want to give a shout out to our year-long sponsor, Black Box Cages, who you will continue hearing shout outs about them going into 2023, because we haven't been posting consecutive episodes, so they're
sponsored a little bit longer.
Yeah it's gonna carry on, so you'll hear more about them as always. If you are listening to this, you will probably be hearing it just at the right time to check out their Black Friday deals, if you're listening around Black Friday time when this episode comes out. So they have a sale that's going on for Black Friday, and they're always looking at new things to add to their product line. So make sure you're checking out either their social media or their website, or both, if you want to be really informed and see what they've got going on, because their cages are absolutely fantastic. And yeah, I think that's a good generalized update for what the hell is going on. Yeah, it's been a crazy year for us also as far as breedings and production animals. You know, it was great talking with Randy, hearing him talk about the Dominican Red Mountain Boas. That was like a passion project for him. You had Janet babies. The passion project for you. I had too many babies because my entire existence is a passion project.
So many babies.
Rob graciously helped me take care of some things while I was on a 2-week tour run. So he knows how many babies there are.
So many babies.
Yeah, there's a lot of babies. Sorry, Rob. That's okay. Oh gosh. But yeah, so this season's been quite wonderful, and I am excited about next season, breeding wise, and next year continuing reptile talk. And you know, we're going to talk a little bit about that. I think we're also going to dabble in talking about what seems to be a popular topic right now with a lot of people on social media, which is the state of the industry. You know, we don't have a State of the Union address ever spoken, but we'll certainly talk about that a little bit in this episode, because going into 2023, there are some things that people should be aware of, especially if you're a newer breeder, newer business. There's definitely a lot of different things to take into consideration going into 2023. But before we dabble into that, do you have anything, Rob, that you're looking forward to breeding this upcoming season?
I really am, like, even debating if I'm going to breed anything this upcoming season, because I'm just like, I forgot how much I hate selling snakes. So like, with the scrubs, I was like, I'm not selling them anyway, so it doesn't matter. And then with all the other stuff, I'm like, I really hate taking pictures of things and editing pictures and posting them online and talking to 53 people who want to, do you have a picture of the side of its under its chin? And I need 47 pictures of each of its parents. And like, don't get me wrong, I understand that people want to know what they're getting. I hate selling snakes. It's the worst.
It's probably the least fun element of this industry.
Yeah. Yeah. So if I do any pairings this year, it'll probably just be for stuff that I can hold back and not have to stress about selling things. Cause I'm like, I really don't want to deal with people. Hey, you got this listed for 400. Can I get it for $100 shipped? And I'm like, dude, the last snake that I shipped out was $100 just to ship it.
Yeah.
And it was going four states away. It wasn't even going to the other side of the country.
Yep. Yeah. Shipping prices have definitely gone pretty high, which is frustrating. But I'm very much in the same position. I think I'm going to breed certain things just for holdbacks, for certain double and triple recessive projects. And outside of that, I'll breed a couple of things just to have young inventory going into the next year, but certainly not on the numbers that I did this year, because I think I produced 300 babies or so this year. So I'm... Yeah, that was a lot. And honestly, for those of you who have seen my reptile room, you know that that was not even production from everything. That was 50% of my ball python females that went, 40% of my carpets, and 50% of my short tails. And I did no Amazons and no colubrids. So there's two facets of my production that didn't even produce in 2022, that'll start to produce in 2023 and 2024. So, yeah, it's a lot of babies.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. So yeah, no, I'm good. I'm good.
Yeah. Literally. I'm just like looking at stuff and I'm like, I really don't want to make more things right now that I have to sell. So I'm just like, nah. Yeah. I was like, maybe I'll throw a couple things together just to see. But like, this is still really early. I don't know. I feel like when I've been breeding bloods and short tails, I usually don't pair stuff until like December, January or whatever. But like in the Blood Python group, there's tons of people who are pairing things right now. And I'm like, you guys haven't even cooled anything yet. I don't know. I feel like people are just getting antsy, throwing stuff together, but they're getting locked, so it is what it is. I'm just very used to doing things a little bit later, I guess. And I don't know, it just I'm still in that, like, I'm not ready to let go of summer yet. I'm like, I just want to hold on to it for just a little bit longer.
I totally understand that, though. I threw a couple of ball pythons together because I have a couple girls that have started producing follicles early. Girls that didn't go in 2022, they're just starting to cycle a little early. So I threw males in there just to get some preliminary action going. But I don't plan on really pushing anything hard this season until probably January ish. It's just so many babies. So many babies. But I also think that's a good segue into, you know, what's going on in the industry right now. What are some of the market trends? What are some of the financial trends? And who you should be paying attention to, who you maybe shouldn't pay attention to, as far as where you're getting some of this information. And I think from my perspective, so Rob and I are, if you don't know, are kind of in two slightly different facets of the industry, right? Rob is a hobbyist keeper who also breeds, but he's got a decent sized collection of snakes as well. Yeah. I'm breeding and selling full time. It is my business. It's how I make my money outside of music. So I also have a large collection, but I also need a large amount of inventory to be able to make sales throughout the year. So we have slightly different views, which is why I think this is also a really good conversation to have, because we are probably seeing things slightly different, but there will also probably be quite a few parallels that we've seen. So I know from my standpoint, you know, I'm breeding snakes. We also breed rodents here. Not large scale, but enough to supply ourselves with rodents that we need. But you know, we've got anybody, and I think this is probably the same for you too, Rob. Rat prices are insane right now.
It's hurting me.
No, it really is. Rodent prices are through the roof. Rodent food prices are through the roof, which is one of the reasons why rat prices are going up and mouse prices are going up. You know, like perfect example. When I first moved down to North Carolina, the rat food that we were using cost about $17 or $18 a bag. This most recent pickup I did, the bags are now $27 a bag.
Damn.
So in 1 year, it's gone up $10. That's almost 100% markup from what it was before. So that causes rat prices to go through the roof, you know, and I don't need that many bags. I maybe go through, you know, 10 bags a month or whatever. But now that's what was a $180 expense is now a $270 expense every month, mm-hmm. you know, to just to be able to feed the rodents I have to produce most of what I need, not even all of what I need. And if we get a lull in rodent production, which happens when temperatures go up, then I need to buy, not only am I buying rodent food, but I'm also buying more rodents.
Yep.
To supplement what I'm not able to produce. So that price just goes through the roof. So then I've got 3 or 4 months where I'm paying X amount of money per month just to keep the rats alive. Mm-hmm. And I'm getting maybe 30 to 40% less production out of them. So now I'm spending 30 to 40% more to fill my freezer or get batches of live rodents in to feed. That adds up super fast, super, super fast. So that is a problem. Depending on where you live in the country, you've maybe seen your utilities go up. Mm-hmm. I know in the state of New Hampshire, utility prices have almost gone up double, which is pretty crazy. I have a couple friends who, you know, to run their house, the decent house might have cost $250, $275 a month, you know, for a substantial house. Now it's costing them close to $500 a month for just electric. Like, that's insane.
Yeah.
That's insane. Now you add having to keep snakes and heating enclosures and all that stuff. Like, God, that's gonna be a pain. So the other element that we're seeing, of course, is, you know, the economy is in a weird place right now, is sales for the most part are not necessarily wonderful. There are, and I think it's important to say a couple of things. If you follow certain breeders who have really high end stuff, guys like Justin Kabelka and you know, Bob Vu and whatever.
Ozzy, yeah.
Right. Those guys that are producing $10,000, $20,000 snakes and are selling larger quantities of snakes. Here's the one thing you need to realize. Just because there's an economic bout of turmoil doesn't mean the business stops. Number one. But also what it means is if you've got the stuff that people really want, people right now are being very picky and choosy with their money, and they're going to wait until they see exactly what they want. So the guys at the top are going to be the guys that typically will still be making money. And as you go down that list, you'll see sales slow down. You know, and in some instances will come to a complete halt for a period of time. And you need to be prepared for that if you're selling. So if you're a new business and you've never dealt with an economic downturn, any kind of recession, if you missed 2008, 2009, good for you. But it's a struggle.
Yeah.
It's a struggle because our inventory is not something you can just throw up on a shelf and leave it to be. You know, it needs daily care. It costs just to have the animal costs money, not even for feeding, but in electricity costs. You know, so then you take food and labor into account as well. And it is costing you money, you know, very quickly. So you need to be able to either A, have a little bit of that financial cushion where you can say, hey, you know what, if I got to hold on to these animals for an extra 6 or 8 months, then, you know, that's just what I got to do and I got to eat it. Or you need to be working in your network enough, especially with like mom and pop pet shops, where you can say, hey, look, I got these 10 snakes. I can't afford to keep feeding, you know, because I've got the rest of my collection that is breeding, you know, so, you know, do you want to buy this wholesale group? You know, are you as the business owner willing to take the potential financial hit so that you're saving money down the long, you know, down the line, or are you going to stick to your guns and then potentially even or lose money at the end of the day if your sales don't pick up? So there's a few different things to be paying attention to, and I think it's good to look at both sides of the spectrum, the people that are still making decent money, you know, and what they're doing and why they're doing what they're doing that is helping keep them making sales during this time, but also look at the other side of that and with the people that are not making any money, what are they doing? What are they talking about? And what's different between the two and what's the same between the two? And then realize that the people, whatever is happening, that the people that aren't making money are not making money for, you know, maybe a silly reason that you're able to pick out because you're paying attention to both sides, then maybe don't do what the people that aren't making money are doing. But making those informed decisions, if this is your first season breeding and you're going into 2023 with a large amount of inventory left, that can be a little daunting because every week it's costing you money, you know. So how are you going to deal with that increase in cost to maintain your collection? If you're a hobbyist that has produced just a couple of clutches, maybe it's not that big a deal. You know, maybe you're going to feel it, but it's not going to put you personally in a position of financial stress, where you can be like, all right, you know, this is fine. I'll be fine. And, you know, maybe I'll throw something up on Morph Market or make a post on my Instagram about like, hey, I'm letting this animal go. You know, if anybody's interested, you know, let's talk. But yeah, so that's my blab about where I'm seeing things in business land. So Rob, I'm curious to see what you're seeing and what you're dealing with from hobbyist, but also with a large collection.
Yeah, I mean, basically, what I'm seeing online is a lot of people just like, oh, the ball python market's dead, it's dead, it's dying. And it's like, it's not dying, it's definitely shrinking right now because people don't have as much disposable income with inflation and everything being more expensive. People don't have as much money to be, you know, tossing out on just buying a couple new snakes, or, you know, they really have to think about their food bill and, you know, rodents and all that sort of stuff and electricity and all, with everything just being more expensive now. People are definitely being more selective with what they're buying, and like, I don't blame them. Absolutely. That's just what it is. But there's a lot of people who got in 2020 when there was just checks being handed out, and people were like, oh, an extra $1,200, I'll buy a whole bunch of snakes.
The stimmy breeders.
The people who were just getting in and selling stuff for the first time were like, this is easy, you can just sell everything. And I mean, at that time it was a lot easier to sell stuff, and then now as the economy is a little bit slower and just everyday life is more expensive, you're competing with the same number of people or even more people now. Mm-hmm. And people are definitely more picky with how they're spending their money, how they're spending their time and all that sort of stuff. So that is something that I've noticed. And there's a lot of people who are saying that, oh, well, ball python market's dead. And it's like, it's not dead. It is definitely shifted a little bit, and you shouldn't expect that the way that the market was last year is exactly how it's going to behave this year, because there's so many factors that have changed in those 12 months. Like you're saying, your feed bags going up a full $10, you know, almost what, more than 50% of the initial cost is just like, that's crazy. And that goes down all the way down the chain. And, you know, I think that, shows definitely are changing things quite a bit as well. You know, where we're at, there are quite a few shows. So I just got lost on all the amount of shows that we got down here. Like, I think there's a show this weekend, but I don't follow any of it because there's just too much. It's oversaturation to me. And, you know, it is what it is. I think the people are recognizing that. And then on top of that, there's also this huge push for people to kind of change up how they do things. And there's a huge push for people to do more naturalistic enclosures, people to have less animals and just have bigger, you know, basically exhibits for them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's still this huge push for ball pythons and ball python morphs and that sort of stuff. But there's also a lot of people branching out into colubrids and frogs and isopods and invertebrates and all this different stuff. And, you know, as those sort of things change, people have to adjust, and people who have put all their eggs in one basket are not able to adjust.
Yeah. That's very true. That's very true. Diversity is key for sure. And not necessarily just in species, just in how you're looking at income streams, you know. Yep. That diversity is key. I think looking, going back to the ball python market being dead comment, you know, I certainly hear that a lot. I see that a lot. I was just talking with our mouse supplier the other day. And I was like, man, you know, you picked the easy lane in the industry to make money, and that's breeding rodents, you know. And what he said to me actually shocked me, and I didn't think about it like this. But he said, you would think so, but what I'm dealing with now is losing clients because people are dumping their collections because they're freaked.
Yeah,
about the cost going up. And I was like, you know what, I didn't even think about that because I'm not in that position. So selling my collection or dumping a chunk of my collection is not anywhere close to the forefront of my brain. But some of these guys that only got, you know, maybe 20 snakes that are like, oh my God, you know, it's already costing me $150 a week to feed these. You know, now I got all these babies. Now it's cost me $400 a week or whatever. I can't afford that. I just got to sell everything. I just got to dump it. And now people like him are losing clients, you know. Yep. So that potential $400 a week is now gone. Mm-hmm. You know, so I wasn't even thinking about that, but that was something interesting to take into consideration as well. So this is, you know, industry wide. And then of course, you know, you've got cage builders and stuff that are dealing with rising costs of PVC and wood and just building materials in general. So the cost of caging is going up, which is interesting going into everybody working toward, well, not everybody, but most people working towards keeping these in more naturalistic enclosures, going bigger. That expense is huge right now if you're mm-hmm. trying to get into it. And I know a handful of people that are, you know, trying to make that change, and I've been not discouraging them by any means, because I think we need more focus on keeping and enjoying animals than just trying to breed them and make money. But I have been telling them, like, wait this out a little longer, wait for the economy to settle, because you'll be able to get, you know, if you want to buy a stack of four cages, that's going to cost you X amount of money. If you wait for the economy to settle, you can get six cages. Mm-hmm. Once prices settle down, and you know, just there's that push to want to quote unquote be better, but it doesn't need to cost you that much, you know. So if you've got things in racks and you're, you know, like, all right, well, they're functional, they work, the animals are healthy, they're happy, you know, they're doing what they need to do, sit with that for a bit, you know, and don't put yourself in a potential worse off financial situation just because you want a pretty cage. You know, so I think that's an element that people need to look at too. And even I was just talking with Tom at ZooMed, and we were talking about sphagnum moss. Mm-hmm. And like, it's still like super difficult to get moss out of New Zealand. Mm-hmm. Right now, you know, and I'm like, that's why I still can't find this crap, but you know, you know, but all these things, there's so much happening in the world, you know, it's crazy to try to keep up with any, really anything.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a little troubling, but at the end of the day, you know, like with these people who are like, oh, I'm just going to dump my collection. Sometimes those get pieced out, and a lot of those people who just buy one snake, they're not buying from a rodent breeder. They're just like either buying from somebody who's local in their town, or they're just buying from Petco. Dude, I went to Petco the other day. A small rat is $14. A small live rat is $14. I was like, are you kidding me right now?
That's insane.
Yeah, it is absolutely insane. I was like, I was there to pick up something else. I don't even remember what the hell I went there for. I literally don't. Oh, crickets for my geckos. And I was like, I'm just going to take a look at some rats. I was like, I got a couple snakes that are a little bit picky and they really prefer live stuff. And I went over there and it was $14 for a small rat. I was like, get the hell out of here. Please do not. No, this is not okay.
Never talk to me.
Yeah, for real. I was like, I knew that they were expensive, but that is obscene.
That's that really is ridiculous. that's painful.
Yeah.
That really
but
is.
You know, I don't even know. Like, it's just, it's very frustrating to me because like I do it as a hobby. And so like, I'm very comfortable just holding on to the stuff that I produced, and I have had, you know, some people interested in buying some stuff, but I'm not like really pushing to sell stuff. I'm like, when I get around to messaging people and whatever, I'll do it. But like, it's not a whether or not I can pay my rent, you know, is not dependent on this sort of stuff. So for me, it's like, I kind of am part-time on that, and it's nice when I make a sale, but it's not something that I'm like really dying for. And I just know that the stuff that I've got, the longer it sits around here, it's just going to get better looking, so it's going to be worth more. So I'm not super stressed about it, but there are those people who have looked at it like an investment, even though they haven't, you know, budgeted or, you know, looked at all these different factors. And then they panic when they see this sort of stuff happen. But man, it's very multifaceted, and I feel like we are in a bit of a lull right now. Like, things went really crazy high for a second, and then right now it's kind of shrinking back a little bit, but eventually it's going to have to level itself off a little bit. And yeah, when we do get back to that point, we'll see. I think the shows will be better, in my opinion. But I honestly don't know if like cost of shipping things is going to come down, because literally they've shown that there's no real reason for these shipping companies to have tripled their prices. Like, gas went up for a hot second and then went back down, and the prices for shipping went crazy high and they've stayed there. It's just artificially inflated so that the companies can make more money. And it's like, bro, if they think that they can hold on.
The fuel surcharge part of the shipping is like $6. So like, it's not, it has nothing to do with fuel.
But it's like, if they feel like they can hold on to that profit, they're not going to want to let it go if they can avoid it. So it's like, it's just very frustrating to see that sort of stuff. Cause it's like, you know, for the average, for someone who's doing it full time, they get a better break. They, you know, are, you know, have buying things in bulk, but you're sending out one box every, you know, couple weeks or, you know, months or whatever. It just ends up being a lot more hassle than it's worth a lot of the time.
Exactly. Yeah, and this is all right. So this comment that just came in from Amy, this is already happening. She doesn't have it from a reliable source. Paper prices will be going up as well. So this is already happening. I know that the paper source for Nerd, one of the paper sources, has already gone up on their prices. Uline went up on their paper prices. Luckily, it was not very much. You know, not really enough for me to like lose my mind over, but you know, they went up on their paper prices. So yeah, I mean, the cost of everything is going up for sure. But yeah, I think the biggest thing that people need to realize is though frustrating and certainly not ideal, stuff like this is temporary. Yeah. You know, this is like you see when people talk about houses, you know, they're eventually the bubble is going to burst, you know, and that's economy wide. You know, it's not just housing or anything like that. Once that bubble bursts, you know, things eventually stabilize. So this is the turmoil of that. And you know, like Brian Barczyk and I have talked about this a few times, you know, because he'd obviously been through multiple recessions. You know, I was really starting J&D Reptiles. That was in 2007. So my second year in business, I was dealing with recession. You know, so that was certainly frustrating, but survived, you know. You know, so this is not to say this is a walk in the park, but this is familiar territory for me, you know, but it's frustrating. You know, it's frustrating, especially when sales were, you know, slamming and crushing. And now it's very much not that, you know, you need to be, especially if you're doing this as a business or even as a hobby that you want to be self-sustaining, right? Yeah. Where you're putting up your own pocket money into maintaining things. All of a sudden you might need to be, you know, and that's frustrating and frightening for certain people. And understandably so, but, you know, I mean, I certainly, and I see it with some other things, you know, it's really easy to point at the people talking about the ball python market, because ball pythons really are a way to understand what's going on in the industry, but it's not the only way. But there are some other people that are talking about, markets not doing that great and things not moving as fast. But, you know, I think when it comes to ball pythons, I think there are two elements that that really come into ball pythons, maybe three. One is, again, what you're producing, right? Like I was just saying, like your top dogs are going to be still able to sell some things, especially if they're doing exports. You know, they'll still be able to move some things. You know, so that's part of that goes to, okay, so working with things that are popular. Right. The genes that are popular, the multi-recessive stuff and all those things, you know, a smaller scale breeder like myself with just a few hundred animals, you know, I'm looking at, okay, I've got some popular genes for ball pythons, but I'm not producing the same things as those guys. I'm producing something that's sort of similar. We've got some of the same genes, but I'm really working a project in this way. So that's one of the things that helps save me for certain projects and to be able to still bring in some sales is I might be working with Desert Ghost in Hidden Gene Woma projects instead of doing Spot Nose and all other things. So it's like, okay, I want Desert Ghost and I really like how it looks with Hidden Gene Woma and the Hidden Gene Woma combos. So let me investigate that. I want to go look at that. You know, so that's certainly an element. I think, as we see, regardless of where the economy is at, people who just, you know, drop a few thousand dollars to get, you know, like some pastels and some spiders and pinstripes and whatever, just to make some bumblebees or whatever. Those are the guys that are really losing their mind. And, you know, maybe they got a clown or a pied somewhere floating around, but nothing really substantial. They're just creating more, we can say pet quality snakes, you know, but there's a plethora of those out there. I don't want to say that they're waste or byproduct, you know, I mean, in certain instances, people are breeding multi-gene animals, that stuff becomes byproduct of a pairing, but I don't want to say that and have it come across in a negative way because those animals still have value. Mm-hmm. You know, Think about it. When I got my first spider ball python, it cost me hundreds of dollars to get my first spider. Now you can get a spider ball or a pastel or a pinstripe for $40.
Yeah.
You know, that's a cool first ever snake for somebody in comparison, you know, a single gene coral glow or banana for $150, like that used to be tens of thousands of dollars, you know, back in the day.
First bumblebee was $750.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so it's like those animals still have a place, you know, and a purpose. And I think that a lot of the industry, especially those who are caught up in the morph game, look at them as byproduct and just kind of like, you know, whatever, they can just go. And I understand that mentality from a sales perspective. You're not going to generate you really much money. It's something you can wholesale and you know, kind of forget about. But I think it's important for the people that are producing maybe a smaller number of animals to realize, like, hey, okay, I'm not necessarily going to make, you know, $1,000 in net profit off of this animal. However, it serves a purpose. And, you know, I'm going to charge $45 for this female pastel. And, you know, it's going to be this kid's first snake at the next reptile show I go to. And that to me is awesome, because we need people to continuously be getting into the hobby. And if I can have a part in that, then that's wonderful. You know, so I think it's important to view things from that perspective as well, whether you own a business or not. Because I see in ball python land, a lot of that stuff just gets written off. Like, oh man, I didn't produce a desert ghost clown. The rest of this is garbage. And it's like, no, man, if you're getting to the point where you see the animals as BS because they're not a $15,000 snake, then you need to, you've already lost. Yeah, you've already lost. And so is every customer you have. They've already lost, you know. That's
it's unfortunate.
Yeah, you know, and you know, again, it's not to negate the fact that as a business owner you need to make money. You know, I mean, you need to be able to maintain your business. If you're doing this as your main source of income, then you need money, you need to pay your bills, whatever. I understand that 100%. You know, but I don't, unless I really have a surplus of inventory, I'm usually not in a rush to move anything. And I generally don't look at any level of my inventory as like, meh, it's whatever. You know, like downstairs, I got a female pastel granite het hypo baby that I produced this year. And it's like, okay, that's a $70 snake, you know, and I've put probably $20, $20 worth of food into it. You know, so, okay, so if I sell at the Raleigh show for $70, I made $50 off that snake. But chances are it's going to go to somebody that's, you know, either they're trying to work a hypo project, or it's going to go to a kid that's, you know, that wants their first snake and they just like that snake. And that means way more to me than really anything else. You know, I mean, a yellow and black ball python for your first snake, like, that's pretty cool.
Hell yeah.
You know,
hell yeah.
I think that's an element that we miss. It's also one of the reasons why I like working with so many different species. You know, with colubrids all the way through to the carpets and retics and berms and blah, 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 to get to every facet of the industry, from the kid that's going to get their first snake, that's so excited because mom and dad finally said yes, you know, all the way to the guy that's, you know, got 100 snakes at the house and it's just like, that's a really cool animal and I need to have it, you know, like everywhere in between. That to me just makes me happy, you know. So I'll never look at anything that I produce and be like, oh, well, that's nonsense. You know, like Lenny and I were talking after we cut one of his clutches, and he produced like a pewter clown or something like that, or a cinnamon clown or something like that. And, you know, he was going for the pewter chocolate clown, which he hit here. And, you know, we're like, oh, man, a cinnamon clown. It was when we were sexing stuff. And we're like, oh man, cinnamon clown, oh, it's a male. And we're like, man, you realize if we hit this 10 years ago,
we'd be losing our minds. Yeah,
our minds, like, oh my gosh. And now here we are, you know, 2022, and we're like, oh, it doesn't have chocolate in it. Now it's not the same. Like, it's just funny to think about it. It made us laugh and kind of look back and put things into perspective. Like, man, they're just cool animals. At the end of the day, we're just playing with genetics of a cool species of snake that people enjoy for various reasons. But, you know, it's crazy to think about. We're so focused on the next newest thing that at this point, what we now think is commonplace, if we were to show it to our past selves, we would be like, that's not real. Like, you painted that. Like, you know, it's really crazy. So I think going into 2023, I think provides a unique opportunity for a lot of people. I think like both of us are thinking similarly, where if we're going to breed some stuff, let's breed some stuff that we can hold back for future projects, where, you know, whether the economy was wonderful or is not great like it is now, we'd still be holding that animal back. We'd still be feeding it. We'd still be raising it up. So nothing is changing in that regard. So it's a chance to push forward on certain projects. And then for me, also breeding a couple of odds and ends things, just so I have some inventory. So when things do start to pick up, you know, I'm not sitting out there like, well, now I can't pay my bill because I didn't produce anything to sell, you know. But yeah, having that, like, I'm going to do some double and triple hit things this year just to raise stuff up that I'm like, I would do it that anyway. So it doesn't, you know, it doesn't matter to me. I'm just going to do it.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah, man.
Yeah, buddy. We're over.
Ad break.
Overtime. Yeah. Ad break. I just looked at the time. I talked too long. So we'll be right back, guys.
Black Box Cages, located in Buford, Georgia, is your one-stop shop for all of your caging and rack needs. Owners Jen and Clint are at the helm of this fantastic company. With one of the shortest lead times in cage and rack manufacturing, Black Box can satisfy anyone's needs. From baby racks to V70s, arboreal and terrestrial caging to deep-fronted bioactive enclosures, you can find everything you need right here. New enclosure sizes and products are added frequently to their availability, so be sure to check back often. Black Box cages have tons of customizing options for lighting and heating. Along with that, cages and racks can be stacked with metal stacking dowels, and all cage joints are dadoed for improved durability and stability. Most cage units are flat packed, but are pre-assembled prior to shipping to ensure a solid build every time. The Micro, XC18, XT3, BioG, and 3-stack V70 ship assembled, and all other racks are shipped freight and assembled. The XR16 and XR20 model racks allow keepers to mix and match tubs. Fitting both Vision and Freedom Breeder tubs, you can mix the V15, V18, and V35S tubs, or the FB5, FB8, and FB35 CVSC tubs. This kind of flexibility allows keepers to raise their animals from hatchling to juvenile or subadult size before needing to upgrade into adult caging. Don't just take our word for it. Go to their website to see countless customer reviews and review videos from keepers all over. To learn more about Black Box Cages, follow them on Facebook and Instagram at Black Box Cages, and of course their website, www.blackboxcages.com. Links to their socials and website will be available in the podcast description.
Boom. So you guys already know the deal. Go check out Black Box Cages and get your new cage, because everybody needs a new cage, even in the bad economy. Everybody needs a new cage. But yeah, man. So I think people are reading the writing on the wall. But I think a large portion of people are maybe a little more pessimistic than they need to be.
Yeah, for sure. And there's not really anything that we're going to say that's going to change their mind at this point. You know, it's like, if they're going to stick it out, they're going to stick it out, and they'll see that, you know, for people who have been around a hot minute, they, you know, it just happens. It happens. And if they don't, then hey, they don't. It's just what it is.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. That's it. Amy, I had to just highlight this comment. Is Jeremy available for all your voiceover needs in 2023? Actually, funny you should say that. If you are in need of voiceover work, it is something that I'm going to be promoting more in 2023, because I've had a lot of people message me throughout the course of 2022 about the various sponsorship ads that we've done And they're like, hey, you have a really good voice for that. So I think it's really just because I have too much equipment to put my voice through. So I can really tweak it. But if you are in need of promoting something, I would be happy to voice over, do a voiceover for you. So
he layers it at least three times to get the full right. sound.
Exactly. I'm stacking vocals all day, bro. Oh my gosh.
Bruh.
Could you having to get the inflection just right every single time would be horrible, actually. Oh my gosh. But funny enough, you know, like I mentioned before, I think it's important, especially as a business owner, but really for everybody in general, having multiple income streams is certainly something that helps you navigate times like this a little better. You know, and of course, that's certainly certainly a challenge for a lot of people to really wrap their mind around, or it's like, I work this one job, I can't, you know, how do I bring in another income stream? I don't have the time to dedicate to that. And you know, the reality is it takes some extra time and dedication to do whatever you're on top of what you're already doing. I think this would be a great topic of discussion to have with Ozzy, because he's all about that multiple revenue stream, generational wealth, all that kind of stuff. And if you haven't checked out the first episode that we did with Ozzy, go back. I forgot what number it is, but I love talking with Ozzy and picking his brain on this kind of stuff, because when it comes to financial literacy, like, he's really dived into that. And what I respect and appreciate about him is, you know, you see, if you look at one ad for a financial literacy course, all of a sudden you get like 50 that start popping up on all of your social media, and they're all the same pushy, aggressive, you know, you need to be doing more in your life and blah, 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 nonsense. And like, invest and, you know, buy my 30-day online course that's going to cost you $2,000 of money that you don't have right now. And I'll tell you how to get rich. And Ozzy's not like that at all. He's very practical, and he's very like down to earth with it. And it's just like, no, man, like, you got to put in the work, but you know, this is how you do it. And I respect that a lot about him.
Yeah. Definitely makes it feel more attainable.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's, I think if people got it in that package, you know, if it was given to them packaged the way that Ozzy can, I think more people would be willing to put in that work, you know, to be like, okay, cool, this is going to suck. You know, I've got to put in some 18-hour days, you know, to make this actually happen. But once it happens, then it's like, okay, cool. You know, this is maybe the best situation. The other thing I want to talk about, because we're coming down to our last 10 minutes or so. This is episode 98. We're going to hit 100 episodes before the end of 2022.
Hell yeah.
Episode number 100 needs to be huge, bro. So what are we thinking? What do we want to do?
I don't know, man. I really don't know.
I was thinking about it today, actually, because I'm like, man, you know, 100 episodes. Like, there's not a lot of podcasts that go 100 episodes. Mm-hmm. It's a notable thing. Oh, man, we got to highlight, the man has just joined us. Oops. Mike Stefani.
Hey.
What is up, man? Appreciate your love and support always, man. Definitely do. So I'm thinking, hear me out. Let me get your thoughts. So we can have like a primary guest or something, like a big primary guest. But then we can go for more than an hour. I think it would be good to go for more than an hour, 100 episodes. I think we just send the join link to as many people we've had on over the past 100 episodes as possible, and just get them to jump on and just say like, hey, if you got 5 minutes, just come, you know, come hang for 5 minutes.
That'd be pretty tight. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty cool.
I think that could be cool, man. like in my brain, okay, we'll talk about it. Why not? We don't need to hold any secrets here. But 100 episodes, 100th episode guest should be Barcheck, because we have yet to get Barcheck on here, and it's Barcheck.
Yes. I'm down. Hell yeah.
He's always told me that he's down to do it. It's just a matter of scheduling. Right now he's in, I think he's still in California, or he just got back from California. He's been out there for days.
I think he just got back.
Yeah. So that's, you know, that's been a thing, but I would love to be like, all right, dude, I know you usually don't travel the last month of the year. So, so let's get you on the podcast. And then reach out to literally everybody else that we've had on this year, or the last 100 shows, and just be like, hey man, 100th episode is now. Like,
yeah,
if you can join us for a couple minutes, just say, hey, you know, come hang, here you go.
Hell yeah. I think that would be pretty tight. I think that could be a lot of fun. Man, that would, I hope. Yeah. I think that's a good idea. It would just be tough trying to schedule and make sure that people are not just sitting around waiting for timing, time slots and everything.
Yeah, right. Right. Well, then we just put 50 people on here at once, and then it just gets.
No.
You get everybody's Bluetooth delays and audio delays happening simultaneously.
Do you want to talk about feedback?
I would go nuts trying to have any of that happen. Like trying to edit any of that audio, like, not appealing. But yeah, so I'm thinking that maybe that's what we do for episode 100. I think that could be cool. And maybe throw a couple like random names into the hat. But I think Barcheck should be like our primary guest.
Hell yeah.
And then yeah, we'll see who else can pop in. I just think that would be fun, and we don't even necessarily need to have a topic, because we can get Brian on later to have like a Barcheck episode.
Well, that's the thing. I kind of want to have Barcheck on his own episode and just do his thing, and then if we want to chop it up and do a 100th episode where it's like a hodgepodge, then I think that would be a lot of fun.
Well, what if we did like a Barcheck episode that was episode 100, and it was the usual hour. And then after that hour, people can.
When he's got a dip, yeah.
Yeah, you know, so if we did a 2-hour special.
Yeah.
Right.
Hell yeah.
And then it was the first hour's Barcheck, and then we just send people the link and say, hey, you know, 8 to 9 Eastern Standard Time, we're talking with Barcheck. 9 to 10 is the free-for-all. Come hang, say what's up. You know, tell us we're awesome because we did 100 of these. And then keep it moving. I want a cupcake. I want champagne. I want all of it. I'm going to put lights on all the buildings behind me. Like, we're going to make this a big deal.
Yes. Yes.
The soundproof squares will just become lit up. Like,
with the sounds of music.
The sounds of music. Oh my god!
Right. I think that could be a lot of fun. I think that we should workshop a little bit, but I think that could be a lot of fun. Have like a amalgamation episode where it's just a combination of all these different things and that sort of stuff. I think that could be really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think we could have a lot of fun with that. And it would be great to just see, you know, I mean, and whoever can do it, you know, it doesn't need to be, you know, like, hey, if you can do it, great. If you can't, you know, obviously no big deal. Yeah. Mike, tuxedos for the both of you.
I'll totally wear a tux. I mean, I don't have a tux, but I'll wear a suit. I'll wear something nice.
You got to get Matt Bowers' tuxedo romper from
Daytona. I told him that I want to get one of those. It's not going to be pretty, but I want to get one of those.
It'll be better than the mankini from Daytona the year prior.
Listen, man. That was critically acclaimed. That's all I'm going to say.
I mean, that's true. It was. It was. We've had some fun shenanigans happen over the last couple of years, bro. Oh my god.
And more to come. Just wait. Just wait, everyone.
Yeah,
more shenanigans to come. Jeremy.
Yes.
Now that we're winding down the episode.
Yes.
We have one very important question to ask you.
Oh, gosh.
What in the realm of reptiles? Yeah, how do you look at a mankini?
No deal.
What in the realm of reptiles has got you excited about reptiles right now?
Not being in a mankini at any reptile-related event.
Okay.
No, honestly, this is the big test year for me for the Amazon tree boas. So I'm definitely geeked and jazzed about that. I've been making sure the females are getting food, I'm gonna go through and revamp all of their cages in December, just kind of get them into that going for the next season. So I'm really excited about that. Carnage is up to bat, as well as Hellboy. So two red animals going to, I think I'm going to put them each to a tiger. I've got two different. Let me get your opinion on this, because okay. I had an idea, but now again thinking about it, I'm like, nah, maybe that's not a good idea. So I was going to put Hellboy to one tiger and Carnage to the other tiger. I hadn't figured out who to who just yet, but and then I've got a high red bicolor female. Mm-hmm. I was going to put Carnage to her. Mm-hmm. I have a tricolor female I was going to put Hellboy to. Mm-hmm. And then I have a pretty much solid yellow girl. She's the girl that I tried to pair Hellboy up with this year that just didn't take. I don't know what I was going to do with her. I don't know if I want to put Carnage to her or not. So what are the other thought process I have is I focus all of Carnage's energy on the tiger girls. Mm-hmm. And let Hellboy play around with the others. That sounds so bad, but
honestly, what I would recommend, or what my thought process is that Amazon males, really, from what I've seen, they can do like one, two females, maybe.
Right.
That, you know, it'd be tough to, because they court for so freaking long that, like, by the time that you get them through two females, you may or may not be able to sneak them into a third by the end of the breeding window. I think that, yeah, your best bet is to have one go to each tiger as your primary. Mm-hmm. And what I would do instead of doing the bicolor, the tricolor, and the yellow is kick the tricolor out to a different one and just do the bicolor and the yellow, because you're more likely to get better color without diluting it with some of the patterning on the tricolor.
True.
And that would be like tigers first, or like do alternative, like do one red male to the yellow female and then Carnage to the leopard, or the tiger. Mm-hmm. And then have the opposite be the alternative, so that you can get at least one litter of tiger calico stuff and then one litter of non-tiger calico stuff. And then if the other one alternatively goes, cool, and it doubles up. But if you do the tiger to red for both, then, I mean, don't get me wrong, red tiger stuff is always going to be fucking killer, but you are more likely to get a little bit more variety with the, and that way you can have stuff all the way from the low end up to the super high end, as opposed to just having that higher end stuff. I mean, Amazon Tribos, you'll always be able to just sell just high end stuff, but
yeah,
it doesn't, I don't know. It really, it probably has to do with condition too for the females. It's like which females are most primed, and those are the ones that would take priority for me.
Right.
And then kick them to whatever afterwards.
Yeah, honestly, the tricolor is probably like the least primed of all of them. Like she's at the where she could, you know, easily go, but in comparison to the tigers, you know, I've been babying those tigers because I really want to make sure that they both go this year. So yeah, I've definitely been babying the tigers a bit. So then I guess the question becomes, which male goes to which tiger.
Ooh.
Yeah, exactly.
Just sweating profusely trying to decide.
Yeah. Yep. I think I think that's a good plan of attack, though. I definitely think it's a good plan of attack. So I've only been doing preliminary thought processes, but I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I like that mentality.
That would be my opinion, personally.
Yeah. I like it. All right, Rob. What's got you excited about reptiles, my friend?
Dude, yeah, I'm going to say something that's not even reptiles, but I've been looking at tarantula stuff, and I used to have so many tarantulas, and then I downsized when I moved, and I still have a few tarantulas, but like, I literally was looking at some pictures today, and I was like, man, I miss having a whole bunch of freaking tarantulas, so I'm like, maybe I need to get some more tarantulas, and they're so cheap, it's just like, oh, maybe I should get some stuff, but I'm like, trying to just like, I really haven't bought things in a hot minute. I've just like been doing my own thing and not really trying not to spend money. But like, man, I love tarantulas. They're so freaking cool. So I've just been jazzed on spiders recently. I don't know what it is, but
hell yeah, dude.
I still have that strong flame. So I've been thinking about tarantulas a lot recently. So that's got me all excited. One of my tarantulas is right about to molt, so I'm like just sitting here staring at it every day. I'm like, you molt yet? Did you molt yet? Did you molt yet? But yeah, that, and then Stephen Kush producing more scrubs. I mean, I don't know if I talked about that in the last episode or the last time that we talked about this stuff, but yeah, I think he had 3 clutches of Barnex this year.
Yeah.
Killer, solid, incredible, you know. He gets all the praise. Super pumped about that. I love seeing scrubs, and then honestly I've seen a lot more people just getting into scrubs and getting interested in them, which is freaking awesome, because I appreciate them, but I know that not everyone has as strong of appreciation for them. And then man, DW Exotics, man, he just picked up a scrub, and I've been talking to him a little bit.
Yeah.
He just picked up a Barnack, and then he's got a Southern. And I was like, bro, just wait. Cause he's letting them settle in. He's doing everything right. He's just like letting everything settle before giving him some space before he goes in and starts handling stuff. And Dre, I was like, dude, just wait. Because as soon as you get to interact with him a little bit, you'll fall in love with them. I think that like anyone who takes the time to not just like, oh, I bought a scrub, oh, it hates me, you know, anyone who takes a little bit of time to like analyze them and appreciate them, it's hard for them not to end up not being like one of your favorites or something that you can deeply appreciate. There's just something different about them to me. Like a lot of, I don't know, the people who talk about King Cobras kind of talk about them in the same way, where they're like, it's just different. And it's like, after working with King Cobras, I'm like, yeah, they're smart, but I don't know, I still like scrubs more. At least if I make a mistake with a scrub, it's like, ow, that hurt.
I'm gonna go die.
Like, yeah. Yeah. I still have all 10 fingers, so
hey, oh god. Heck yeah.
All right, man. So Jeremy, if people want to find out more about you and look at some of the stuff that you're doing this year, this upcoming breeding season, where are they gonna look for you?
You can go everywhere. Yeah, go. You can check me out everywhere. Brassman Reptiles on Facebook and Instagram. Brassman Rep on Twitter, and The Brassman on TikTok. I changed it up on TikTok. You can still look it up, Brassman Reptiles, but I changed it up on TikTok because I use that platform for both snakes. So I just put up that as The Brassman. Instagram is the easiest way to get a hold of me if you want to get a hold of me and ask me questions about stuff, and also where I post information about where I'll be going as far as expos, which the Raleigh November show is coming up the weekend after Thanksgiving. I will be there for that. That's about it for me. What about you, Rob? Where can people find you?
Look me up on Instagram at Rob is creeping it real, on TikTok at Rob is creeping it real. Don't add me on Facebook. Twitter is currently dying. So if you're still on Twitter, yeah. I'm sorry. That like, platform's horrible. On its way out. Yeah. Yeah. It's gone. It's gone. But yeah.
It got musked. I win.
It got Nerodia musked.
Musked on.
Well, I know what meme I need to make as soon as we're done with this.
Oh, it's so funny. Like, I have not thought about saying that until this very moment, and I'm very happy I waited until right now.
That's gold. That's too much.
Oh, God, yes.
A very niche audience will appreciate that. But for those who do,
they're all laughing right now. They're all laughing. And if they're not, they should be.
Accurate.
Jeez. Oh, my God.
Oh, man. Well, this has been a fun episode. Hopefully people like it. And then make sure you stay tuned, because this 100th episode is going to be pretty bomb.
Be coming up soon, faster than you know. All right, guys.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Take care.